So this might end up being kind of a, I don't know. Can't categorize as maudlin because that technically, according to the Webster's definition or maybe the Wiktionary definition, but whatever the definition, you're supposed to be a little bit drunk, and I am not drunk. Just high on life for a Tuesday, which is rather strange. But I've had another crossroads thrown in front of me. And just so y'all know, those of you who read my blog or listen to my podcast or whatever, you kind of have a sense of how I see the future. I don't see it as the end of the world. I just think that the sort of belief that there's going to be some magical Disney paradise just beyond the horizon, I think that might be a bit farcical. But that doesn't mean the end of the world. It just means that we need to adjust our expectations to reality. And some of those realities could be quite, shattering. In fact, most of those realities have no continuous connection to our current paradigm. Our current paradigm is so completely isolated in its exotic nature that it's almost impossible to make predictions about the future based on the present. But anywho, that's just life and that's the world. And I don't want to go off on tangents about those subjects because I've beaten many a dead horse and I expect the ASPCA or the PCSPA or the TLSA or the Hydro PGSA or the third tier inner core of the Gondo Lords of the 14th level Masons. Someone will get back to me about all those dead horses being beaten. Oh boy, that was a Skype message. Yep. Someone's getting back to me. Anyways, what I want to talk about are choices and choices that sometimes suck. And in life, sometimes every choice sucks. Now, I can't go into great detail for issues of confidentiality, but recently I've had to consider some options that are making my life a little bit more chaotic again. And I'm not super happy about that, but I'm not entirely sure any of us have much of a choice at this point in human history. And it puts in front of me a bunch of choices, including the option of going back to Seattle. And so you all know, I'm actually deeply horrified by the idea of going back to Seattle, Washington, or Tacoma, Washington, or Wenatchee, Washington, or anywhere in Washington. I don't really hate Washington State. I think I've come to the realization that I projected a lot of my own failures, my own guilt over my broken relationship onto the state of Washington. And for that, I owe the state of Washington a heartfelt apology. But that's a moment of revelation. And can't we treat it like that whole South African forgiveness thingy, where if we're just honest about it, we can all just live and let live, right? No necklacing needed is my point. Anyways, life has gotten a little bit crazier again, and that's okay because I might also be staying in Indianapolis. In fact, it's way more likely than not in my case that I will stay put. I sometimes have these fantasies about going to other places, but they're based upon a vision of reality that I've come to realize is quite false. On the other hand, when I moved here in 2014, I think I believed I could get on some magical Amtrak train ride and somehow arrive in the year 2003. And there ain't no magical Amtrak ride. It don't exist. So here's the thing. These choices, they don't always work out. I took a job when I left the service for a company called Silgan Containers. Silgan Containers, I think they were out of Menominee Falls, Wisconsin. And this was, roughly October, 1999. And I took the job in part because another job I'd landed after leaving the service blew up. I'd gotten a job to work for the feds, technically for the feds, the Department of Energy at Hanford. I was going to be some type of a project manager out there, and it was all pretty cool. And I'd have a Q clearance, and I get to walk around some highly radioactive materials all day long in Hanford, Washington. Well, anyways, that job fell through because of a DUI, and no, I don't believe Jesus made me drink, but sometimes I wonder about Jesus and his magical hand because sometimes it's strange. Anyways, I didn't end up working for Hanford, so I took this really crappy job working for Silgan Containers. And what does Silgan Containers do? Well, basically what Silgan Containers does is they coat and they paint cans, you know, for like soup and beans and crap like that, or at least that's what they did in 1999. And one day on the job as a management operations trainee, I noticed this van pulling up to the back of Silgan Containers as they rolled large barrels of nondescript waste material. Because so you know, you wouldn't think a company like this produces toxic waste, but it does. It produces lots and lots of runoff sealant, lots and lots of runoff, you know, inner coating, outer coating, you name it. And all that gets collected in the barrels. And these barrels get rolled up into the back of trucks. But the people that come out of the trucks, they're not dressed in overalls. They don't have like these official looking uniforms and shit. They're dressed in suits with gold chains. And their shoes are fucking, you know, they're fucking more polished than my boots were during a parade when I was in the Army. Although I guess that's not saying much for those who knew me. I never was quite to a Ranger standard when it came to my boots. I was never technically a Ranger. But that's a separate topic. Anyways, I was airborne qualified, but my boots were never airborne standard as far as polish goes. Never did go the 82nd, though. That might have something to do with it. Separate topic, really, from this. Yeah. So, anyways, these guys show up to Silgan Containers, and they roll the 50-gallon or 100-gallon cans. I don't know how many gallons those barrels would hold, but they roll these barrels of toxic waste into the back of the van, and these well-dressed guys with Russian accents. And you say, well, Dan, how do you know Russian accent? Well, I'll tell you. I have a few years of Russian education at university. Yago Varu Nimnyoga Paruski. I don't know if I speak it that well, but who fucking gives a shit, right? Anyways, per the story, these guys with a slight Russian accent, they don't get paid with a check. They don't get a bill of lading or whatever. They don't get like some receipt. There is no document exchanged. All that happens in the back of this fucking facility is a guy basically hands an envelope full of cash to some dude who sounds fucking Russian. Now, of course, I don't have any proof that this ever happened, and this happened so long ago that I may have mistook it. Like, maybe these were just well-dressed guys who move around toxic waste. Maybe they weren't going out to Lake Michigan to dump it on the shore someplace. Who the fuck knows? You say, well, what's the point of your story? Well, that job clearly didn't work out. So I was there for about a month and a half until I realized I just wasn't really fond of the idea of having guys in suits with Russian accents dealing with our toxic waste remediation issue. So I moved to Indianapolis, and that's how I ended up here in 1999. My brother was here. I had two sisters here. It's an amazing place. I made another choice. I rolled the dice. I didn't give up. Now, the reason why I'm talking about these stories the way I am, and I might talk about one or two others, is because of another little story. In the summer of 1993, I was working in one of the most favorite jobs I've ever had in my whole life. I worked as an ordinary crew member on a NOAA ship. These are the National Oceanographic and Atmospheric Administration vessels. I worked on one of these ships, the Miller Freeman, in the summer of 1993 up in the Gulf of Alaska. And I was only working for them for about 8 months. I was basically working to save money to go to graduate school. But along the way, I had a lot of experiences working on that ship that were just amazing. And it turned out that, like most places, there were good people, bad people, people you liked, people you didn't like, people you were more or less neutral about. But for the most part, the people on board that ship were pretty decent people, hardworking people, and the work they did was pretty straightforward science. They did population studies. They would essentially fish. They had nets. They would capture fish. They'd count fish. They would weigh fish. They'd do other types of experiments. But I think they did primarily population studies of fish. Anyways, we were in Juneau, I think. And I think it was August of 1993. And we were at a place called Sheep Creek. Our ship was actually moored because we were actually in Juneau moored. And we all were basically on leave. So, you know, or we were released. It was after work hours. And and that time of year, so you know, the sun basically doesn't go down in Alaska until, well, no, pretty much almost never. But so I grabbed my fishing pole and I went up to Sheep Creek. The salmon were running and we were basically going to see if we couldn't angle for a few, do a little fishing. And I saw this one salmon and it was really beat up. I mean, you have to understand something. These salmon, they're going up there. The male salmon are more or less going up there to die when you think about it. I guess male and female. I really don't know a lot about the whole salmon life cycle, but what I can tell you is that salmon, they basically go upstream to reproduce and then they die. And you look at these salmon and it's like some of them have clearly been upstream already, but they're still twitching. They're still trying to move. It's like, it's kind of like they're not quite dead or whatever, like from The Princess Bride, you know, almost dead, not quite dead. In fact, I looked at one salmon and it was like, it was still technically alive, but it looked like it should be dead. And of course there were birds nearby getting ready to pick them off, and they weren't really long for the world. I mean, essentially that desperate struggle, that attempt to pass on one's genetic material to the next generation, it's all part of the big game of life. But for that particular salmon, the battle was pretty much over. And yet the salmon wouldn't stop. Now I'm going to tell you something. I don't know if anybody has a fairly good description of how you live a good life. I do not. My life has in some ways been one mediocre episode of you know, emergence followed by periods of disaster, and I still to this day don't know if I'm going forward or backwards. And that's the truth. I wish I could say, "Oh, I know for certain all of my progress is forward progress," but I don't honestly know if that's the truth. I don't know if all my progress is forward progress. I don't know if I'm actually moving forward at all sometimes. But I need to keep trying. I can't stop. It's sort of the thing that people ask when they ask you, you know, have you ever thought about killing yourself or do you feel depressed? And I won't lie. I get depressed. And in the last few years, I probably had more depression than I would normally. But I keep thinking about that salmon when I think about my life. One of the things that keeps me alive is I just don't stop. I'm not saying I'm wise. I'm not saying the decisions I make are the best decisions. In fact, in some cases, I'm convinced the decisions I make are terrible decisions. I just won't stop deciding. I won't stop trying. Even as pathetically lethargic as I've been in recent years, which is something I definitely need to change, I'm not going to stop trying. I haven't given up on the business world. I gotta be honest with you. I've gotten awfully close at times to wanting to become a transient, a hobo. And I know that's not romantic. I know it's basically an exit path directly to death. And within a decade or two, you know, you're just some guy who died in the streets. I know the truth of it. But you get to a point where you ask yourself, why are you doing what you do every single day? What is the purpose? What I can tell you is that even if there is no purpose, and I don't know if there is for you or if there isn't, I can't control other people's meaning. I control my own. But whether there's purpose or not, there is something to be said for the essential purpose of just trying, just not giving up. I'm probably in many ways a pathetic person, and I've often been cowardly, afraid, and let my fear take over. I won't lie about that. I'm not proud of it. It's something that, you know, I work on. But I've had moments where I've let my fear be more dominant than my reason, and not for good reasons. But I'm not going to give up. there's just too much of this world yet left, and it's not all terrible. You know, people can easily get sucked into these notions that life is a giant shit pile. And I won't lie to you, there are many things about life these days that can really suck. But that's why we have to adjust our eyes. That's why we have to change our perspective. If you think about your life, your world, the people you know, the people you love, that's the essence of everything. That might be everything, depending upon your religious perspective. So I don't have magical answers. I can't tell you that I have some deep philosophical lessons to tell you about how you make the right decisions in life professionally or personally. I have no idea. I can't recommend a dating site. I can't recommend a recruiter. I can't tell you that there's some person who lives someplace, you know, far up in some fucking mountain range who will give you some type of, you know, sage perspective that will shatter your consciousness. I have no fucking clue. If those people exist, maybe they do, but they probably really don't. And if they do exist, they're most likely just in it for their own fucking good. Not trying to be an asshole, but this idea of the fucking selfless wise guy who goes around sharing selfless knowledge, it's really romantic until you start deconstructing the fucking illusion. Even the fucking monk who wanders the countryside has a purpose and a meaning and often an agenda, and more often than you might realize, it's a hidden agenda. So anyways, there is no, I don't have a deep truth. I can tell you that I got to keep making choices. If I stop making choices, if I give up on the possibility that there is a path through the wilderness, that's when I really give up. That's when what comes next is probably the darkness. So my advice to most people is before you beat yourself up for a stupid choice, remind yourself that you at least you had the courage to make a choice. Maybe you made the wrong choice. Well, then what you do is you learn from it. Next time you try to just not make the same choice, you know, or basically avoid the problem altogether. But that's kind of the best any of us can do. And on some level, it might not be more complicated than that.